Hi, this is Mrs. English. I am reading from Milton's Paradise Lost, and we are now at Book 8. Book 8, The Argument. Adam inquires concerning celestial motions, is doubtfully answered, and exhorted to search rather things more worthy of knowledge. Adam assents, and still desirous to detain Raphael, relates to him what he remembered since his own creation, his placing in paradise, his talk with God concerning solitude and fit society, his first meeting and nuptials with Eve, his wedding, his discussion with the angel thereupon, who after admonitions repeated departs, Line 1. This is Adam, he's going to be speaking to Raphael. The angel ended, and in Adam's ear so charming left his voice that he a while thought him still speaking. So the Raphael's voice was so charming it took Adam a while to figure out he had quit speaking. Stood still fixed to hear, then as new waked thus gratefully replied. So Adam says to Raphael, "What thanks sufficient, or what recompense equal have I to render thee, divine historian, who thus largely hast allayed, relieved, the thirst I had of knowledge and vouchsafed, granted, this friendly condescension to relate things else by me unsearchable, now heard with wonder, but delight, and, as is due, with glory attributed to the High Creator, something yet of doubt remains, which only thy solution or explanation can resolve. When I behold this goodly frame, this world of heaven and earth consisting, and compute their magnitudes, this earth a spot, a grain, an atom, with the firmament compared and all her numbered stars, that seem to roll spaces incomprehensible, for such their distance argues and their swift return diurnal, okay, every day, merely to officiate light round this apacious earth, this shady earth, this punctual spot, one day and night, in all their vast survey useless besides, reasoning I oft admire, how nature wise and frugal could commit such disproportions, with superfluous hand so many nobler bodies to create, greater so manifold, to this one use, for aught appears, as far as I can see, and on their orbs impose such restless revolution day by day repeated, while the sedentary earth that better might with far less compass move, served by more noble than herself, attains her end without least motion." This is line 35. So Adam does not understand, oh my goodness, we're only an atom in the huge, tiny speck in this universe, and it looks to me like everything revolves when he looks at everything, it looks like we are nothing compared with all the stars, and it looks like they roll around. They can't surely roll around just for us, for this apacious, this little shady earth, this punctual spot. They have to come by here the same time every day. He's wondering, how does the universe work? Line 35. Her end without least motion, and receives as tribute such a sumless journey, brought of incorporeal speed, like a spirit speed, her warmth and light, speed to describe whose swiftness numbers fail, so faster than, you know, the speed of light or something, swiftness number fails, you cannot measure. So spake our sire, that's Adam, and by his countenance seemed entering on studious thoughts obtruse, abstruse, incomprehensible, which Eve, persisting where she sat, retired in sight, with lowliness majestic from her seat, and grace that one who saw to wish her stay rose, and went forth among her fruits and flowers, to visit how they prospered, bud and bloom, her nursery, they at her coming, sprung, and touched by her fair tendance, gladlier grew. Yet went she not as not with such discourse or speech delighted, okay, she didn't leave because she wasn't pleased with the topic, or not capable her ear of what was high, wasn't that she wouldn't understand it, such pleasure she reserved, line 50, Adam relating, she sole auditress, that she would prefer to wait and let Adam tell her, with she the sole auditress, the sole listener. Her husband, the relator, she preferred before the angel, and of him to ask, chose, rather, he. She knew he would intermix. grateful digressions and solve high dispute with conjugal caresses. So she knew that he would stop with little digressions and explain things or solve high things that are a matter of high dispute with conjugal caresses. Conjugal is having to do with marriage. From his lip, not words alone pleased her. Oh, when meet now such pairs in love and mutual honor joined. Okay, when do you see a couple like this? With goddess-like demeanor forth she went, not unattended, for on her as queen a pomp of winning graces waited still. And of course this is capitalized because metaphorically he's comparing her, that she's like a queen surrounded by the graces. The graces in Greek mythology were mirth, splendor, and bloom, or beauty. And they would attend Venus or Aphrodite. And so it's as though she's a queen with all of these things that surround her, metaphorically. A pomp of winning graces waited still, and from about her shot darts of desire into all eyes to wish her still in sight. Okay, she's beautiful, everyone wants to look at her. And Raphael, now to Adam's doubt, proposed, benevolent and facile, or easy or mild, thus replied, line 65. So now Raphael speaks. To ask or search I blame thee not, for heaven is as the book of God before thee set, wherein to read his wondrous works, and learn his seasons, hours or days, or months or years, this to attain, whether heaven move or earth. Okay, this let's figure out. Does heaven move or does earth? Imports not. Doesn't matter, if thou reckon right, and the rest from man or angel the great architect did wisely to conceal, and not divulge his secrets to be scanned by them who ought rather admire, or if they list to try conjecture, he, his fabric of the heavens, hath left to their disputes, perhaps to move his laughter at their quaint opinions wide. All right, Milton says, not everything's going to be revealed, and perhaps God leaves some of these things as mysteries because he enjoys it. And it's amusing to him to see their opinions, their quaint opinions, wide. Hereafter, when they come to model heaven and calculate the stars, how they will wield that the mighty frame, how build, unbuild, contrive to save appearances, how gird the sphere with centric and eccentric scribbled over, circle and epicycle, orb in orb. Already by thy reasoning this I guess, line 85, who art to lead thy offspring, and supposest that bodies bright and greater should not serve the less not bright, nor heaven such journeys run, earth sitting still, when she alone receives the benefit. Consider first that great of or bright infers not excellence. Okay, just because something looks great or brighter does not mean it's better. The earth, though, in comparison of heaven, so small, nor glistering, may of solid good contain more plenty than the sun that barren shines. Okay, just because the sun is huge and shiny, the tiny little earth that's not even, doesn't even glisten, might have more. And in fact, he says, may of solid good contain more plenty than the sun that barren shines, whose virtue on itself works no effect. But in the fruitful earth, there first received his beams. Okay, so the sun is not worth anything except when it hits the earth. There first received his beams. Unactive else, their vigor find. Okay, what else would the sun do? Wouldn't have a use. Yet not to earth are those bright luminaries, officious, obliging, but to thee, earth's habitant. Okay, it's not just to the earth, it's to you, the inhabitants. And for the heaven's wide circuit, let it speak the Maker's high magnificence, who built so spacious, and his line stretched out so far, that man may know he dwells not in his own, an edifice too large for him to fill, lodged in a small partition, and the rest ordained for uses to his Lord best known. The swiftness of those circles attribute, though numberless, to his omnipotence, his unlimited power. That to corporeal, or physical, tangible, touchable, substances, could add speed almost spiritual. Me thou thinkest not slow, who since the morning hour set out from heaven where God resides, and ere midday arrived in Eden, distance inexpressible by numbers that have name. But this I urge, admitting motion in the heavens, to show, line 115, invalid that which thee to doubt it moved. Not that I so affirm, though so it seemed to thee who hast thy dwelling here on earth. God, to remove his ways from human sense, placed heaven from earth so far that earthly sight, line 120, if it presume, might err in things too high and no advantage gain. What if the sun be center to the world? And other stars, by his attractive virtue, and their own incited, dance about him various rounds. All right, I mentioned we would have both models of the universe demonstrated here in Milton, and we've seen both mentioned here. And of course, Newton was about 20 when Milton wrote these lines, but Kepler, Johann Kepler, had already suggested that the attractive virtue or power of the sun moved the planets. I'm reading from my footnotes, and the Greek word planets means wanderer. Their wandering course, now high, now low, then hit, progressive, retrograde, right, because they go in a circle or an oval, or standing still, in sixth thou seest, and what if seventh to these the planet Earth? So steadfast though she seem, insensibly three distances motions move, which else to several spheres thou must ascribe, moved contrary, with thwart obliquities, cross angles, or save the sun his labor, and that swift nocturnal and diurnal roam, suppose invisible, else above all stars, the wheel of day and night, which needs not thy belief, if earth industrious of herself fetch day traveling east, and with her part of earth from the sun's beam meet night, her other part still luminous by his ray. What if that light, sent from her through the whole transparent air to the terrestrial moon, be as a star, enlightening her by day, as she by night this earth, reciprocal, if land there be, fields and inhabitants, line 145, her spots thou seest as clouds, and clouds may rain, and rain produce fruits in her softened soil, for some to eat allotted there, and other sun perhaps with their attendant moons thou wilt discover. Okay, perhaps someday you'll find another sun with their own attendant moons. Communicating male and female light, line 150, which two great sexes animate the world, stored in each orb, or sphere, or globe, perhaps with some that live. For such vast room in nature unpossessed by living soul, desert and desolate, only to shine, yet scarce to contribute, each orb a glimpse of light, conveyed so far down to this habitable, which returns light back to them, is obvious to dispute. But whether these things, or whether not, whether the sun predominate in heaven, line 160, rise on the earth, or earth rise on the sun, he from the east his flaming road begin, or she from west her silent course advance, with inoffensive pace that spinning sleeps on her soft axle, while she paces even, and bears thee soft with the smooth air along, solicit not thy thoughts with matters hid. Okay, so he says whether the sun moves around you or you move around the sun, whether that it's an inoffensive pace, so a very, very, such a slow pace that the earth, the spinning, sleeps on her soft axle, that because she's pacing even and it's a soft moving and the smooth air, you don't feel the wind of it, that maybe you just can't tell because it's so easy. Solicit thought not thy thoughts with matters hid. Leave them to God above, him serve and fear. Of other creatures, as him pleases best, wherever placed, let him dispose. Line 170. Joy thou in what he gives to thee. This paradise, and thy fair Eve, heaven is for thee too high to know what passes there. Be lowly wise. Think only what concerns thee and thy being. Dream not of other worlds, line 175. What creatures there live, in what state, condition, or degree, contented that thus far hath been revealed, not of earth only, but of highest heaven. To whom thus Adam, cleared of doubt, replied, how fully hast thou satisfied me, pure intelligence of heaven, angel serene and freed from intricacies, taught to live the easiest way, nor with perplexing thoughts to interrupt the sweet life, from which God hath bid dwell far off all anxious cares, line 185, and not molest us unless we ourselves seek them with wandering thoughts and notions vain. But apt the mind or fancy is to rove unchecked, and of her roving is no end, till warned or by experience taught she learn, that not to know at large of things remote from use, obscure and subtle, but to know that which before us lies in daily life, that's the prime wisdom, what is more, is fume, or vapor, or emptiness, or fond impertinence, foolishness, line 195, and renders us in things that most concern unpracticed, unprepared, and still to seek. Therefore, from this high pitch, let us descend a lower flight. So Adam agrees with the angel Raphael. Okay, we won't talk about high things. You've told me enough. and speak of things at hand useful, whence haply mention may arise of something not unseasonable to ask by sufferance, and thy wanted favor deigned. Thee I have heard relating what was done ere my remembrance. I've heard you talking about what was done before I had a memory. Now hear me relate my story, line 205, which perhaps thou hast not heard. And day is not yet spent. Till then thou seest how subtly to detain thee I devise, inviting thee to hear while I relate. Fond were it not in hope of thy reply, for while I sit with thee, I seem in heaven, line 210. So I'm trying to get you to stay longer, trying to detain you, to invite you to hear what I can relate to you. And sweeter thy discourse is to my ear than fruits of palm tree, pleasantest to thirst and hunger both. From labor at the hour of sweet repast, they satiate, they fill, and soon fill, though pleasant, but thy words with grace divine imbued, bring to their sweetness no satiety. So I can hear you talk forever and I don't get full. And now Raphael speaks. To whom thus Raphael answered, heavenly meek, Nor are thy lips ungraceful, sire of men, nor tongue ineloquent, for God on thee abundantly his gifts hath also poured inward and outward both, his fair image fair. Speaking or mute, all comeliness and grace attends thee, and each word, each motion forms. Nor less think we in heaven of thee on earth. So Raphael is just as impressed with Adam as Adam is with Raphael, and is saying, we admire you in heaven. Let's see. Speaking or mute, all comeliness and grace attends thee, and each word, each motion forms. Nor less think we in heaven of thee on earth than of our fellow servant, and inquire gladly into the ways of God with man. For God, we see, hath honored thee, and set on man his equal love. Say therefore on. Okay, go ahead. Say therefore on. For I that day was absent, as befell, bound on a voyage uncouth and obscure. So he says, I was on that day absent, the day God made you. I was absent. I was on a voyage uncouth and obscure. Because, of course, he was off chasing bad angels when God created Adam. So he would like to know. For I that day was absent, as befell, bound on a voyage uncouth and obscure, far on excursion toward the gates of hell, squared in full legion, such command we had, to see that none hence issued forth a spy or enemy while God was in his work, while God was busy making the earth. Line 235. Lest he incensed at such eruption bold, destruction with creation might have mixed. Not that they durst without his leave, permission, attempt, but us he sends upon his high behests, commands, for state as sovereign king, and to inure our prompt obedience, to get them to be accustomed to obey quickly. Fast we found, fast shut the dismal gates, and barricadoed strong, but long ere our approaching heard within noise other than the sound of dancer song. It was not the sound of dancing and singing after they closed those gates. Torment and loud lament and furious rage, glad we returned up to the coasts of light ere Sabbath evening, line 245, so we had in charge. But thy relation now, for I attend, pleased with thy words, no less than thou with mine. So spake the godlike power, and thus our sire. So Adam now speaks. For man to tell how human life began is hard, for who himself beginning knew. Desire with thee still longer to converse induced me, as, new waked from sound asleep, soft on the flowery herb, I found me laid in balmy sweat, which with his beams the sun soon dried, and on the reeking moisture fed. Straight toward heaven my wondering eyes I turned, and gazed awhile the ample sky, till raised by quick instinctive motion, up I sprung, as thitherward endeavoring, trying to stand up. And upright, line 260, stood on my feet. About me round I saw hill, dale, and shady wood, and sunny plains, and liquid flow, of murmuring streams. By these, creatures that lived and moved and walked or flew, birds on the branches warbling, all things smiled. With fragrance and with joy my heart overflowed. Myself I then perused, and limb by limb surveyed, so then I looked at myself. And sometimes went, and sometimes ran, with supple joints, as lively vigor led. But who I was, or where, or from what cause, knew not. To speak I tried, and forthwith spake. My tongue obeyed, and readily could name whatever I saw. Thou, sun, said I, Fair light, and thou enlightened earth, so fresh and gay, ye hills and dales, ye rivers, woods and plains, and ye that live and move, fair creatures, tell if ye saw, how came I thus, how here? So Adam tells Raphael that he is asking the creatures if they know how he got there. Not of myself, by some great maker then in goodness and in power preeminent. Tell me, how may I know him? How adore from whom I have that thus I move and live? Very similar to Acts 17. In him we live and move and have our being. And so why does Adam want to find who made him? Because he wants to adore him. And feel that I am happier than I know. While thus I called and strayed, I knew not whither from where I first drew air and first beheld this happy light, when answer none returned, line 285. On a shady bank profuse of flowers, pensive I sat me down, thoughtful I sat me down. There gentle sleep first found me, and with soft oppression seized my drowsed sense, and untroubled, though I thought I then was passing to my former state, insensible. Okay, so he gets a little tired and thinks that now he's passing into that state before he was born or made, and forthwith to dissolve, when suddenly stood at my head a dream, whose inward apparition gently moved my fancy to believe I yet had being. So I thought my life was a dream, and lived. One came, methought, of shape divine, line 295, and said, thy mansion wants thee, Adam. Rise, first man of men innumerable, ordained first father. Called by thee, I come thy guide to the garden of bliss, thy seat prepared. So saying, by the hand he took me, raised, line 300, and over fields and waters, as in air, smooth sliding without step, last led me up a woody mountain, whose high top was plain. So God takes him by the hand and shows him the garden. You can imagine them flying through the sky. A circuit wide enclosed with goodliest trees planted, with walks and bowers, that what I saw of earth before scarce pleasant seemed. Each tree loaded with fairest fruit that hung to the eye tempting, stirred in me sudden appetite to pluck and eat, whereat I waked, and found before mine eyes all real, as the dream had lively shadowed. Here had new begun my wandering, had not he who was my guide up hither, from among the trees appeared, presence divine. Rejoicing, but with awe, in adoration at his feet I fell. Submiss, he reared me, and whom thou soughtest, I am, said mildly, author of all this thou seest above, or round about thee or beneath, this paradise I give thee, count it thine. So God says, you wanted to know who did it, that was me. Count it thine to till and keep, line 320, and of the fruit to eat, of every tree that in the garden grows, eat freely with glad heart. Fear here no dearth, but of the tree, whose operation brings knowledge of good and ill, which I have set the pledge of thy obedience and thy faith, amid the garden by the tree of life. Remember what I warn thee, shun to taste, and shun the bitter consequence to know. The day thou eatest thereof, my sole command transgressed, inevitably thou shalt die, line 330. From that day, mortal, and this happy state shall lose, expelled from hence into a world of woe and sorrow. Sternly he pronounced the rigid interdiction, which resounds yet dreadful in mine ear, though in my choice not to incur, but soon his clear aspect returned, and gracious purpose thus renewed. Not only these fair bounds, but all the earth to thee and to thy race I give, as lords possess it, and all things that therein live, line 340. Or live in sea, or air, beast, fish, and fowl, in sign whereof each bird and beast behold after their kinds, I bring them to receive from thee their names, and pay thee fealty. With low subjection, understand the same of fish within their watery residence, nor hither summoned, since they cannot change their element to draw the thinner air. And thus he spake, each bird and beast behold, approaching two and two, these cowering low with blandishment, so they stoop to bow. Each bird stooped on his wing, I named them as they passed, and understood their nature. With such knowledge God endued my sudden apprehension. So God let me know what their nature is. But in these I found not what me thought I wanted still. I still didn't find what I wanted, what I was lacking, line 355. And remember, this is Adam now telling Raphael everything he knows of his own creation. And to the heavenly vision thus presumed. So Adam looks up to God. Oh, by what name, for thou above all these, above mankind, or aught than mankind higher, okay, than any kind of mankind, surpasses far my naming, how may I adore thee, author of this universe, and all this good to man, for whose well-being so amply, and with hands so liberal, thou hast provided all things? But with me I see not who partakes. In solitude, what happiness! Who can enjoy alone, line 365, or all enjoying, what contentment find? Thus I, presumptuous, and the vision bright, as with a smile more brightened, thus replied. So God speaks now to Adam. Adam has told him he's lonely. What callest thou solitude? Is not the earth with various living creatures, and the air replenished, and all these at thy command to come and play before thee? Knowest thou not their language and their ways? They also know and reason not contemptibly. With these find pastime and bear rule. Thy realm is large. Line 375. So spake the universal Lord, and seemed so ordering. I with leave of speech implored, and humble deprecation thus replied. And Adam says, and then this I said to God, let not my words offend thee, heavenly power, my maker. Be propitious, which means favorably inclined, while I speak. Line 380. Hast thou not made me here thy substitute, and these inferior far beneath me set? Among equals, unequals, what society can sort, what harmony or true delight, which must be mutual in proportion due given and received. But in disparity, the one intense, the other still remiss, cannot well suit with either, but soon prove tedious alike. Of fellowship I speak, such as I seek, fit to participate, all rational delight. Okay, all of these creatures are below me, they're not rational. Wherein the brute cannot be human consort. The beast cannot be human company. They rejoice each with their kind, lion with lioness, so fitly them in pairs thou hast combined. Much less can bird with beast, or fish with fowl, line 395. Okay, they must be pairs. You can't put a bird with a beast, or a fish with a bird. So well converse, nor with the ox, the ape, worse then can man with beast, and least of all. And God replies, whereto the Almighty answered, not displeased, a nice and subtle happiness I see thou to thyself proposest, in the choice of thy associates, Adam, and wilt taste no pleasure, though in pleasure solitary. What thinkest thou then of me and this my state? Seem I to thee sufficiently possessed of happiness or not? Who am alone from all eternity, for none I know, second to me or like, equal much less, how have I then with whom to hold converse, save with the creatures which I made, and those to me inferior, infinite descents beneath what other creatures are to thee? Line 411. So God says, that's all I have, Adam, the creatures I've created. And Adam says, he ceased, Adam says, I lowly answered, to attain the height and depth of thy eternal ways, all human thought comes short. Supreme of things, thou in thyself art perfect, and in thee is no deficiency found. Not so is man, but in degree. This is, of course, talking about the great chain of being. This is degree. The cause of his desire by conversation, with his like to help, or solace, comfort his defects. You're perfect, God, and all alone. Man needs solace and conversation. No need that thou shouldst propagate, multiply, line 420, already infinite and through all numbers absolute, though one, but man by number is to manifest his single imperfection, and beget or produce like of his like, his image multiplied, in unity defective, which requires collateral love, you have to get love back, and dearest amity, friendship, thou in thy secrecy, although alone, best with thyself accompanied, seekest not social communication, yet so pleased canst raise thy creature to what height thou wilt of union or communion, deified. I, by conversing, cannot these erect from prone. I cannot, by talking, raise these animals from the way they crawl around, nor in their ways complacence find. Thus I emboldened spake, and freedom used permissive, and acceptance found, line 435, which gained the answer from the gracious voice divine. Thus far to try thee, Adam, God says, I was pleased, and find thee knowing not of beasts alone, which thou hast rightly named, but of thyself, expressing well the spirit within thee free. Line 440. My image not imparted to the brute, whose fellowship therefore unmeet, unfit for thee, a good reason was thou freely shouldest dislike, and be so minded still. I, ere thou spakest, knew it not good for man to be alone, and no such company as then thou sawest intended thee. I didn't intend for you to have company from here, for trial only, for test only brought, to see how thou couldst judge of fit and meet. What is meet suitable? What next I bring shall please thee, be assured. Thy likeness, thy fit help, thy other self, thy wish exactly to thy heart's desire. So God is telling Adam, wait till you see what I have for you. So now Adam speaks to Raphael. He ended, or I heard no more, for now my earthly by his heavenly overpowered, he was overpowered, which it had long stood under, strained to the height in that celestial colloquy, dialogue, sublime, as with an object that excels the sense, dazzled and spent, sunk down and sought repair of sleep, which instantly fell on me. So just talking to God exhausted him. He couldn't ask anymore, he just fell down. Called by nature as an aid, and closed mine eyes. Line 460. Mine eyes he closed, but open left the cell of fancy my internal sight. So he kind of had a dream. By which abstract as in a trance, methought I saw, though sleeping, where I lay, and saw the shape still glorious before whom awake I stood, still saw God, who stooping open my left side, and took from hence a rib with cordial spirits warm, and life blood streaming fresh, wide was the wound, but suddenly with flesh filled up and healed. The rib he formed and fashioned with his hands. Under his forming hands a creature grew, line 470. Manlike, but different sex, so lovely fair, that what seemed fair in all the world seemed now mean, lesser, or in her summed up, or in her contained and in her looks, which from that time infused sweetness into my heart unfelt before. Here we have love at first sight, line 475. And into all things from her air inspired the spirit of love and amorous delight. She disappeared and left me dark. I waked to find her, or forever to deplore her loss, and other pleasures all abjure give up. Line 480. When out of hope, behold her, not far off, such as I saw her in my dream, adorned with what all earth or heaven could bestow, to make her amiable, likeable. On she came, led by her heavenly Maker, though unseen and guided by his voice, nor uninformed of nuptial sanctity and marriage rites. So God's always already instructed her on what is proper for marriage. Grace was in all her steps, heaven in her eye, in every gesture, dignity and love. I overjoyed could not forbear aloud. This turn hath made amends. Thou hast fulfilled thy words, Creator bounteous and benign, giver of all things fair, but fairest this of all thy gifts, nor enviest. I now see bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, myself before me. Woman is her name, of man extracted. And this is because the Hebrew word for man is ish, and the Hebrew word for woman is isha, of man. For this cause he shall forego father and mother, and to his wife adhere, and they shall be one flesh, one heart, one soul. She heard me thus, and though divinely brought, line 500, yet innocence and virgin modesty, her virtue and the conscience of her worth that would be wooed, and not unsought, be won, not obvious, not obtrusive, but retired, the more desirable, or to say all, line 505, this is Milton's description of a perfect woman, apparently. Nature herself, though pure of sinful thought, wrought in her so that seeing me, she turned. I followed her, she what was honor knew, and with obsequious, deferential. Majesty approved my pleaded reason. To the nuptial, or the bridal, bower, I led her blushing like the morn. All heaven and happy constellations on that hour shed their selectest influence. The earth gave sign of gratulation, congratulation, and each hill, joyous the birds, fresh gales, and gentle airs, line 515. This is all of nature celebrating the marriage of Adam and Eve. And gentle airs whispered it to the woods, and from their wings flung rose flung odors from the spicy shrub, disporting, frolicking, till the amorous bird of night, the nightingale, sung spousal and bid haste to the evening star on his hilltop to light the bridal lamp, line 520. Thus I have told thee all my state, and brought my story to the sum of earthly bliss which I enjoy, and must confess to find in all things else delight indeed, but such as used or not works in the mind no change, nor vehement desire, strong desire. These delicacies, I mean, of taste, sight, smell, herbs, fruits, and flowers, walks, and the melody of birds, but here, far otherwise, transported, I behold transported touch. Here passion first I felt, line 530. Commotion strange, in all enjoyments else superior and unmoved. Here only, weak against the charm of beauty's powerful glance, or nature failed in me, and left some part not proof enough such object to sustain, or from my side subducting, subtracted, took perhaps more than enough, at least on her bestowed too much of ornament, in outward show elaborate, of inward less exact. Maybe God took a little too much out of him, and maybe she is a little bit too much focused on outward ornament, or maybe God focused too much on that, and inward might be a little bit less exact. Here we definitely see Milton's opinions of women. And of course, if you're doing your reading, you realize that one of his three wives was only in his home for 6 weeks and then went back to her parents and then came back again. So Milton has cause to perhaps not understand women completely. Line 540. For well I understand, in the prime end of nature, her the inferior, in the mind and inward faculties, which most excel, in outward also, her resembling less his image who made both, she looks less like God, and less expressing the character of that dominion given over the other creatures. Yet when I approach her loveliness, so absolute she seems in herself complete, so well to know her own, that what she wills to do or say seems wisest, virtuous, discreetest, best, line 530. All higher knowledge in her presence falls degraded. So when he's with her, common sense doesn't make sense. Knowledge, whatever she says, is just what he decides he wants to do. All higher knowledge in her presence falls degraded. Wisdom in discourse with her loses discountenance, and like folly shows, authority and reason on her weight, as one intended first, not after made. Occasionally, and to consummate all, greatness of mind and nobleness their seat, build in her loveliest, and create an awe about her as a guard angelic placed. To whom the angel with contracted brow, and Raphael's going to tell Adam not to blame nature for making Eve so beautiful, but to be wise and cherish and honor her and love her, but to manage yourself so you earn her respect. Don't just follow her around. So the angel says, line 561, accuse not nature, she hath done her part, but thou do thine, and be not diffident of wisdom. She deserts thee not, if thou dismiss her not, when most thou needst her nigh, by attributing overmuch to things less excellent, as thou thyself perceivest. For what admirest thou? What transports thee so? And outside, the way she looks? Fair, no doubt, and worthy well thy cherishing, thy honoring, and thy love, not thy subjection. So you be the boss. Away with her thyself, line 570. Then value. Oft times, nothing profits more than self-esteem, grounded on just and right, well-managed, of that skill the more thou knowest, the more she will acknowledge thee her head. Hey, the more you are just and right, the more she will let you lead her. And to realities yield all her shows, line 575. Made so adorn for thy delight the more, so awful that with honor thou mayest love thy mate, who sees thou when thou art seen least wise. She's going to see you when you are at your worst. But if the sense of touch whereby mankind is propagated, so if the marriage union seems such dear delight beyond all other, if that's all you think about, think the same vouchsafed or permitted to cattle and each beast, which would not be to them made common and divulged, if aught, if anything, therefore enjoy were worthy to subdue the soul of man or passion in him move, what higher in her society thou findest attractive, human, rational, love still. In loving thou dost well, in passion not, wherein true love consists not. Love refines the thoughts and heart enlarges, hath his seat in reason, and in judicious is the scale by which to heavenly lore thou mayest ascend. So concentrate on high things, not passionate, sensual things. Not sunk in carnal, fleshly pleasure, for which cause among the beasts no mate for thee was found. To whom thus half abashed? Adam replied. So Adam's a little embarrassed, line 595. And the answer is to Raphael, that neither her outside form so fair, nor aught in procreation common to all kinds, though higher of the genial bed by far, and with mysterious reverence I deem, so much delights me as those graceful acts, line 600, those thousand decencies that daily flow from all her words and actions, mixed with love and sweet compliance, which declare unfeigned, unpretended, a union of mind, or in us both one soul, harmony to behold in wedded pair, more grateful than harmonious sound to the ear. And so Adam is agreeing, yes, marital harmony is more beautiful than any music to your ear or anything beautiful on the outside. Yet these subject not, I to thee disclose what inward hints I feel, not therefore foiled or dishonored, who meet with various objects from the sense variously representing, yet still free, line 610, approve the best and follow what I approve. To love thou blamest me not, for love, thou sayest, leads up to heaven, is both the way and guide. Bear with me then, if lawful, what I ask. Love not the heavenly spirits? And how their love express they? By looks only? Or do they mix irradiance, virtual or immediate touch? So Adam dares. He says to the angel, if love leads to heaven, then, and you value that, then do the heavenly spirits love? And how do they express it? Do they only look? Or do they mix virtue? Or do they touch? To whom the angel, with a smile that glowed celestial rosy red, Raphael is blushing, love's proper hue, answered, line 620, let it suffice thee that thou knowest us happy, and without love no happiness. Whatever pure thou in the body enjoyest, and pure thou wert created, we enjoy in eminence, and obstacles find none of membrane, joint, or limb, exclusive bars, easier than air with air. If spirits embrace, total they mix, union of pure with pure desiring, nor restrained conveyance or expression need as flesh to mix with flesh, or soul with soul. So Raphael says you will have to be satisfied with knowing that we are happy, and there is no happiness without love. Line 630. But I can now no more. The parting sun beyond the earth's green cape and verdant isles Hesperian sets. And of course that means it sets in the west. The Garden of the Hesperides was in the west. My signal to depart. Be strong, live happy, and love. But first of all, him whom to love is to obey and keep his great command. Take heed lest passion sway thy judgment to do aught, anything, which else free will would not admit. Thine and of all thy sons, the weal, the happiness, or woe in thee is placed. Beware. Okay? So future generations depend on you. I, in thy preserving, persevering, shall rejoice. If you persevere, I will rejoice. And all the blessed stand fast, to stand or fall, free in thine own arbitrament. Power, the power to decide, it lies. Perfect within, no outward aid require, and all temptation to transgress, repel. Resist all temptation to disobey. So saying, he arose, whom Adam thus followed with benediction. Since to part, go heavenly guest, ethereal messenger, sent from whose sovereign goodness I adore, gentle to me and affable hath been thy condescension, your coming down, condescending to come down here and talk with me, and shall be honored ever with grateful memory. Thou to mankind be good and friendly still, and oft return. So parted they, the angel up to heaven from the thick shade, and Adam to his bower. So Raphael has been obedient to his commission to entertain and to exhort and to warn Adam. And that is the end of Book 8.